obsess about it, you fantasize about it. I mean, when you finally hear the news...
Take a deep breath.
Think about is, why me? I mean, how could this happen? How could I be negative?
From Slightly Unbalanced, we are still Queer as Folk. I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
Today we're talking about episode 3 of season 4, and it's called Starting a Whole New Life.
It first aired on May 2nd, 2004, and was written by Brad Fraser, his third of 8 episodes. He also produced 12 episodes and was the executive story editor for 14 episodes.
Starting a Whole New Life was directed by Chris Grismer, his second of 3 episodes. And I like to mention this every time he directs something. He also directed 5 episodes of Kyle XY. Still haven't watched it.
But you are obsessed with it.
I will watch it at some point.
Yes. Here's what happened in Starting a Whole New Life. Fresh out of rehab, Ted tries to get his life back on track by finding a job. With no accounting of jobs available for the Wharton MBA, Ted takes Blake's advice and becomes a singing waiter at a tacky Italian restaurant. Ever the supporting friend, Michael rounds up the gang and surprises Ted at work.
Brian enlists Justin's mother, Jennifer, to find him office space for his newly launched agency, aptly named Kinetic. Jennifer quickly hones in on Brian's tastes and finds a run-down, deserted bathhouse in which to set up shop, making his private office in the former steam shower room.
She is damn good at her job.
Yes. The IMDb viewer rating is 8.3, which is roughly the average for this season. So, where we left off last time, we were talking about Justin and the Pink Posse.
Yes, it's a gang.
Gang of ruffians. We're only 3 episodes into season 4, and already it's full of hokey storylines and kind of cheap, weird, misplaced comedy moments. This season rings very early 2000s television.
Yes, so... let's just get into the Pink Posse. So we see them. They're all gathered in Justin and Daphne's apartment because their room is... Okay, so we had this question in the first episode of season 4. We're like, wait a minute. What, is he staying with Brian? Is he still with Daphne?
Yeah. Here, is he homeless?
he states, this is my roommate, Daphne. She's my best friend. Invited everyone over, seemingly, it seems, without Daphne's permission. Heads up, I'm going to have a bunch of people over to get haircuts.
I can't believe they hauled Daphne in for this scene. She had like 4 lines.
But I loved her presence in it, and I'll tell you why. So we see that everyone in the Pink Posse is getting a haircut to look like Cody Bell.
Cody can pull off that haircut.
He can. Doesn't mean everybody can.
Right.
It goes from, it almost reads almost a little culty too.
Oh yeah.
Like, let's make everyone look like the leader. It was very strange. And Daphne wants to say, like, can I join? Which makes total sense. She is like ally and wants to keep the streets of Liberty Avenue safe, just as anybody else would. And he says, yeah, it's for queers only.
Can I join?
It's only for queers.
I thought keeping the streets safe was everyone's concern. Well, I guess I'll grab a straight soda and head to my straight room and study my straight studies.
She's my best friend. Why couldn't she be a part of this?
Because this is about queers defending themselves.
Right.
Queers standing up to their attackers. Yeah. Queers fighting back.
Right on.
Let in heteros. It dissipates the purpose.
Yeah, now go to your room.
Right. And she's like, let me just go and get my straight soda so I can do some studying on my straight stuff. I was like...
Yeah, she should have pulled out that moment in, was it season 2, when she went to the corner store with the lesbian to get a soda.
She's like...
The Our Town like, moment.
Yeah, she may have eaten somebody out. Anyway.
Yeah. So the Pink Posse, back in 1990 in New York City, a similar vigilante type group popped up called the Pink Panthers Patrol. It was an offshoot of Queer Nation, which itself was an offshoot of ACT UP. They're probably best known for being very confrontational and outing people.
Oh, that is.
So this was, this was late 80s, early 90s where... it was well known that various people in power were gay.
Gotcha. Yes.
And they would out them publicly as a way of saying, you are in a position of power. You need to be open about this and you need to help the community. So that was kind of ACT UP's big thing.
Right. I mean, have you ever seen or read The Normal Heart?
No.
By Larry Kramer? It is very autobiographical, but takes place in New York in the 80s before they had a name for AIDS. It's about his experience when he tried to create ACT UP and how he's basically ostensibly removed from the group because his tactics were deemed too confrontational when trying to get things done. But like, he was telling gay men to not have sex because us having sex with each other is killing us and we don't know why. And it was, first of all, it's a beautiful play. And Larry Kramer is still the most outspoken activist and still calls every single person out on their bullshit. And it's just fascinating. So I can see how this is a clear, even more extreme version of that.
Yeah.
Because ACT UP was very in your face. And here, as we see later on, the Pink Posse has taken it to another level.
Interestingly enough, the Pink Panther Patrol was sued by MGM over the use of the name Pink Panther, and MGM won.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I'm sure Pink Panther is copyrighted.
True, but can you imagine if in 2019, if a movie studio went after a gay advocacy group, loosely using that term, and sued them over their name?
It's not as far-fetched as you may think. This is a bit of a tangent, but like right now, there is a revival of a new version of To Kill a Mockingbird on Broadway that Aaron Sorkin wrote.
Really?
Yes. It's really funny. When I was there, I went and saw one show. My friend went and got a ticket to that, and she said it was amazing. I kid you not, Scott Rudin, who is the producer of that show, I guess there was some sort of licensing issue between the Sorkin version that's currently running on Broadway and the previously adapted version that a lot of community theaters and small theater groups do. They're basically suing them to shut down all those other productions.
All these little community theater? Really? Yeah.
But now it's also come out that
all the high schools doing it?
Yeah. So like they have to shut them down. And so Scott Rudin has now offers like, here, I want you to still do To Kill a Mockingbird, but
version?
Go ahead. Yes. Do Sorkin's version. And I'm like, this is all very shady and sketchy, but in sort of.
When did Sorkin write that?
This year.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah. Oh, it was a whole thing because then like he had made, I guess in his adaptation, people called into question the way he adapted it and how he portrayed certain characters like Atticus and like the Lee, like the heart, like the Lee estate was like going to sue them. And like, there was an injunction to stop them from doing it.
I've got to see this.
Oh, it was a whole thing, but it's like running on Broadway right now. It's gotten rave reviews.
Does it transfer to the West End? I only see Broadway shows in London that you tell me to go see.
I don't know if they have any plans to take it to London right now, but like, so Jeff Daniels plays Atticus Finch.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How did I not know about this?
Someone who was in Spider-Man version 1.0 on Broadway. Ugh. He played one of the geek chorus. He plays
my friend Matt.
No, not, but someone who was in the geek chorus with him.
Oh, no kidding.
Plays, Dill.
I'm going to go see this.
Yeah.
Road trip.
I wish I could have seen it in my trip, but yeah.
So the Pink Posse, Justin and Cody go on a crime spree together.
Yes. So remember, this was originally supposed to be like they were going to protect the streets.
They went on
themselves.
Offense.
Yes. So the first time we see two guys get harassed by a passing car and the Pink Posse
takes them down,
calls into action.
Yeah.
Hey, faggot! Want to suck my cock?
Come on.
Go, go, go.
Yeah. Motherfuckers! Who do you think you are calling people faggot? Get out of the car! Get out of the
Calm down.
Fucking car! Hey, what are you doing? Look what you did to my fucking car, you asshole!
Why'd you let me do the same thing to you?
You and who else, faggot?
The other faggot. Apologize, you too.
Hey, fuck you, you little cocksucker.
Hey!
Something about that takedown that I bumped on was they pulled their pants off,
yes.
Straight guys. Doesn't that kind of up their crime to sexual assault?
I think so. It's one thing to like confront them.
Yeah. But when you de-pants them.
Yes. And I wish Justin had the foresight to be like, maybe we went just maybe a little too far.
Well, it did the opposite because it got him all sexed up and he rushed home to like bang Brian.
Yeah. He's like, I need a dick inside me now.
Did you hear this really awkward sound moment while Justin was riding Brian? It sounded like that occasional ass exhale from a bottom. Did you hear that?
I did not. Now I want to go back.
Let's listen to it right now.
Okay.
Oh my God. You're all choked up.
I just laughed so hard.
I mean, it's part of the song and it does linger, but it was as soon as Justin kind of takes this downstroke on Brian's dick, we just hear.
And anyone who has ever had that kind of intercourse knows.
Yeah, it happens.
It's a part of the thing.
Yeah. You're
pushing air up there. Like,
but we don't need to hear it in a fantasy TV show.
10 points for realism.
So I'm still struggling to find Justin's motivation for this crime spree with Cody and the Pink Posse. Where is all this rage in Justin coming from all of a sudden? We talked a little bit about this last time, but what happened to the boy that was in love with a violin player, the art school intern, the propaganda artist?
This is a Justin behavior pattern. When he's introduced to something new, he falls into it like in an extreme way.
Yeah, over one episode, yeah, like, he just snapped, shaved his head, beat up people, offended his best friend Daphne.
Like when we see Justin meet Brian, he thinks he's in love with him. When he meets Ethan, it is like the love affair that he knew he always wanted.
Oh, I love that story, though.
And now he's met Cody and he's ready to bash some heads in.
Yeah, I just find it very implausible that Justin could do such a U-turn in life and actually attack that straight guy at the end of the episode when he punches him out.
But this is the point I'm making, is that they love to throw him into the extreme.
True.
there's never any nuance to get him there.
I think this might have worked better if it was at the beginning of season two, when he was recovering from his bashing, because at that moment in the overall arc, he had real reason to be angry and to act out. Now it's just sort of like, what? Why are you doing this?
Yes, this whole thing with Darren is reignited something that he had never dealt with.
Or yeah, what? And like we don't know the Darren thing. Okay, I can get on board with that, but. Like we talked about last time, the Darren arc was really weak. Yeah. It's like, who is this guy? Why does Justin care?
All of a sudden.
Right. There was another Placebo song in this episode. It's called Special Needs, and it was playing in the background when Justin was getting suited up for his Pink Posse outfit to go on patrol.
Can we talk about the Pink Posse outfits?
Yeah.
So we know clearly they wear pink. Okay.
Pink sleeveless shirts.
So the pants are
khaki or camo. You have two choices.
So I obviously disagree with both choices because they're ugly. And the fact that everyone, again, because everyone is wearing the same thing, same haircut, we think that they're really just going out and inciting all this violence.
Yeah. I mean, the Pink Panther Patrol did that. The Guardian Angels do that. They wear a recognizable uniform. I don't know. This is kind of like an old man story. I don't think these days you're going to really find a couple of gay guys that are going to suit up and go out and be vigilantes.
No, I think
maybe a couple of fierce drag queens.
Work.
But yeah.
But I think
you just drop that in without even blinking.
Yeah, I know. I think today we are so fiercely political that we're trying to use that kind of action to drive change.
Direct action? Or
yeah. So I don't think trying to be violent is something that, at least in queer community, is the tactic that we use now. I think now we're about being outspoken. We have clearly all become savvy on social media.
Yeah, I mean, it seems all digital.
Push our message, yeah.
It's less in-person direct action and it's all digital direct action where you're just kind of yipping at people. Mm-hmm. Whereas Justin and Cody are going out and actively trying to find trouble. And
yes.
It's like they said on the first night, they held some old queen change a tire.
Yeah, I'm like, why is that so bad? Like, why can't they do that?
Yeah, kind of like AAA, triple gay.
Branding. We are trademarking that right now.
Triple gay?
Yes.
back to their uniform. Did you notice that they wear a holster of some sort? And it looked like it was probably like pepper spray or something. Yeah, pepper spray. Mm-hmm. But they never use it.
No, they like go straight to their fists.
Yeah. So, I don't know. This whole thing was just sort of like, who is writing this?
Well, yeah. And also, I'm sorry, but like, I feel like the police would have gotten about, because there was a police liaison at the meeting in the previous episode. So she hears like, oh, there's a vigilante group, but maybe the cops just don't care enough. Like,
yeah, no follow up on that.
Nothing. No one. No. Okay. there's also a moment where I think we were getting some backstory with Cody while he's like, right before they find like that straight guy to bash, basically.
Deep hand. Oh, the one at the end.
Yeah. At the end where he's like having this really serious, like, moment about like his history, but he's doing it while buying a pretzel.
You're right.
I couldn't take it seriously.
Do you want mustard on that too? Or
I was like, and then like, he's just like gnaws on it while they go. Arr. I'm like, oh,
okay.
I don't think of him as a tough guy because he's eating a fucking pretzel aggressively.
Oh, like I talked about last time, it's the season is almost like a comedy of errors. It's just,
it's bonkers.
Yes. I hope he gets better. But this is
don't hold your breath.
Third episode, we have 11 left. So,
oh boy,
and I know how this series or the season ends. I know what the cliffhanger is, and I'm not looking forward to that one. Still Queers Folk. There's more on the way. So the B story is Ted. Ted's story holds up. I've seen friends go through that post-rehab refinding themselves period, and this seemed pretty accurate about all the nonsense with the Pink Posse. I think that the writing team got it together for Ted. That's a start.
Yes. Yeah, so we join up Ted and Blake at Health Center. You know, I want to call it Howard Brown just because we're in Chicago, but I know, I assume Pittsburgh has a similar kind of
building
that you could go to for certain health issues, i.e. HIV tests.
You obsess about it, you fantasize about it, but when you finally hear the news...
Take a deep breath.
Think about is, why me? I mean, how could this happen? How could I be negative?
We kind of know that it's going to turn out negative, but they try to clumsily sell it to us that he may be positive or something.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I didn't like that dialogue there.
We know.
Well, I mean, we didn't, because just remember, he was being gangbanged by a bunch of meth heads. The hokey dialogue leading up to Ted being negative is what ruined it. It could have been written better. This was complete with a teary-eyed guy in the background that apparently had just found out that he's positive.
Yeah.
So it was... another comedy of errors, which, okay, I see what you're going for. I see why it was written this way, why it was directed, but you're blowing it. It's not good writing. It needs peer review.
Yeah.
There's something about Michael's behavior in this storyline that irks me also. He's just this constant yo-yo of thoughtful adult and moronic imbecile. Like when they go to this restaurant, there's no way that any friend in their right mind would gather up a group of people to go watch their friend who used to be an accountant be a singing waiter if that person had never told them about that in the first place. This is not the thing that you surprise people with.
Yeah.
Bad judgment, Michael. Well,
and I know what Michael is going for. I know he is trying to be supportive and understanding that Ted is just trying to make it through one day at a time. And he just wants to be there for him because that's his friend. I respect that. I admire that. I think Michael's head is in the right place.
It would be like if I found out that you were directing the Medieval Times horse show and I showed up with a whole bunch of people, even our listeners, to see you direct the Medieval Times horse show.
Have you ever been to Medieval Times?
Well, yeah, but...
That's awesome. So, like, it's hard to...
You're like in Ben's camp because
Ted was embarrassed. I would be like, ain't this awesome?
Well, Ben is the one that says that going to the singing waiter place is a blast. And that's again, like one of these dumb lines that Ben keeps getting. The writing this season just is not great. It's not season one. Definitely. It's definitely not Russell T. Davies's storylines that were lifted. I just remember back when
I was so stressed about it.
Here's a comparison. Remember back when Michael first met Ben and there were those scenes in his apartment with Michael struggling with finding out that Ben is positive. What happened to that kind of good writing? Now it's like, let's go to the Italian restaurant and see Ted sing.
There was also some really great direction. Like that moment when they decided they not only can they not have sex, they can't really be together and they cut out the sound.
What happened? Where is this show going?
Season four happened. That's what happened.
And this one had like that gunslinger cutaway.
Oh, yes, that high noon showdown between Ted and Emmett that I thought was ridiculous.
It just threw comedy in the face of what could have been like a real drama scene.
Well, yeah, and I'm also just, I was just so irritated at Emmett, which is a hard thing for me to do, because he thinks Ted has no value, even though Ted is showing that he completed rehab. He is doing his best to reintegrate himself into the real world.
It's like, what does Emmett want from him?
Yeah, what the fuck do you want?
Yeah, and why are you getting so lit with all your friends about Ted just doing his thing?
And him trying to just like live. Mm-hmm. He's trying to live because like every horrible thing that he did was while he was on drugs. And he's trying to say like, I am off of them and I'm just trying to live my life and make it through. And Emmett's like, fuck this and fuck you for supporting him. And of course you're going to go call your friend Ted. And be, I'm like,
yeah, well, and didn't they just share this radical fairy experience over a weekend?
Yes.
What was he popping off at Michael for?
So stressful.
So there was more hokiness the moment that Ted started to lip sync.
Well, can we go back just a little bit? Because I want to talk about the actual opera audition.
Oh, I had a note about this too.
Okay.
So you go first because I got a way that I could have improved this scene.
Yes. So first of all, laugh out loud to this whole opera audition because one, the first guy that comes to that audition right before, he's doing the same song that is used at the very beginning of Mrs. Doubtfire, and that's all I could think of the entire time because they literally let him do the whole song, and I'm like, why? But when Ted comes in and they ask him about what his experience is, and they already have like such a snippy attitude towards him. And here's my problem. So I do casting. I am that person behind the table. And they're doing literally everything that I try not to do as a casting director. They have a bit of an attitude against him. They sort of mock him for not knowing to give the music to the piano player, to the accompanist right away. And
it's his first audition.
If it's his first audition, but the point is that they're not doing anything to make him feel comfortable. Going into an audition room is stressful enough.
Yeah.
Now to say like, okay, here are two people who clearly don't like me and think I'm a total fucking amateur, even though I just told them that. The energy that I don't think any casting director tries to go for when bringing in someone to audition.
What do you try to do? Like just be calm and neutral?
Yes, you welcome them. You welcome in like, whenever I'm doing an audition, person comes in, they hand me their headshot. I call them by their first name. And I was like, great, Patrick, what do you have for us today?
They go, well, I went to North Allegheny High. And then Wharton.
And, you know, you try and make them as comfortable as possible because that's nerve-wracking because, actors are always putting themselves out there. And, you know, they could prepare for an audition for weeks at a time possibly.
Sure.
And it's over within 20 seconds.
And they're doing it for free.
Yes. Like it's an actor's job to go in an audition. And if you're going into work environments that are never welcoming, why would you want to keep doing that? So that was like the vibe I was getting from those two guys right away. And then he like surprises them, I guess. And he lip syncs for his life.
Well, Mr. Parducci is the one guy.
Parducci.
He's played by A. Frank Ruffo. At first when I saw him, I thought that he was Phil Leotardo from The Sopranos.
Oh my God, yes.
And I was like, wait a minute, who is that guy? And then I looked it up and was like, definitely not him, but
no, it's like the B version of that.
Yeah. So as much as I've been complaining about the writing, I had a great idea for this scene that I think a better writer might have worked in.
Okay.
Wouldn't it have been useful to have Roger be the piano player? Do you remember Roger?
I do remember Roger.
He played the piano at the at Justin's art show.
Oh.
And
he walks in and has to like give it.
Wouldn't that have really added to the tension of Ted's audition? He's coming out of rehab. He knew this guy before rehab. Why not put that guy on the piano bench for it?
I feel like that's what that
make him even more uncomfortable.
That may have been like too deep a kind of like how many people would remember Roger?
Well, you can give him a couple lines.
So that we know that it is.
Yeah, because remember when Ted dispatched him out of the bedroom?
Yes.
With like some really cutting lines. It would have been perfect to to have him there judging Ted the way that everybody else is judging Ted. But Mr. Parducci is just not enough to carry this for me. So I would have written in Roger.
Okay.
Once again, Dean Armstrong is killing it in every scene. Blake's friendship with Ted is really playing out well. He's looking after him. He's looking out for him. He's helping him adjust to the sober life. He's like almost the de facto sponsor, which made me wonder, why doesn't Ted have a real sponsor?
I thought Blake was his sponsor.
No, Blake was like the professional counselor. Now they are like friends.
I guess I always bought it that was a sponsor.
Well, we find out in a few more episodes the limits of what that sponsorship is. But again, it's like, I'm kind of sad that Dean Armstrong doesn't have like a full season here.
Yeah. With us.
This is still Queer as Folk, and there's more to come. Stick around. This runner here, I know that you will have loved, and that is Vic and Rodney.
I was such a fan of this that I'm like, I see him running in to get into bed with Rodney, and Rodney, I'm like, Rodney could get it. Okay. I like an older man. I'm cool with it. And then to hear Debbie like whining and wondering where the hell Vic was like, let Vic get his. Jesus.
Well, I thought that Rodney was unduly harsh on Vic.
Something tells me the temperature tonight's going to hit record lows.
What makes you say that?
Because I'm already feeling a chill. And it's coming from your side of the bed.
She never leaves us alone. I thought that when we got together, we were going to be a couple, not a threesome.
What can I do? It's her house.
It's your room.
Well, it's not much better at your place with your three roommates running around.
So I guess we can never be alone.
Why is it Vic's fault?
I think Blue Balls has a big effect on men. So I can understand Roddy's frustration.
Well, yeah, agreed. But here's where I think the story just went off the rails, because if that's really the case, you just say, Debbie, back off. Okay. But I think.
Have you ever met Debbie Novotny?
Yes, and people have talked her down before and backed her off. I think I would rather have seen Rodney and Vic independently decide to live together as a couple, as opposed to being forced into it just to get some privacy from Debbie. The story was told like, we have to move out and we have to get away from her. How about they just have like a date? They are walking through the park, they're holding hands. They come to this conclusion together without anybody pushing them into it. It seems like that would have been a much cuter story. Well, but as it is, Debbie just comes across as meddlesome when in fact she's always been like super supportive of Vic and Rodney. Well,
and
they didn't need her as a reason to move in together.
I agree with what you're saying. I'm just saying I think maybe the episode does that, but not in the way you would have wanted it to.
Yeah, it wasn't fair to Debbie. It's Debbie's fault that they had to move out.
It makes it look like that, yes.
Why not have Rodney move in there and establish ground rules with Debbie? That would be cuter. That would be like a whole spinoff series.
Well, and I think this is an interesting dilemma that they bring up, because he said, you know, we can't go to Rodney's place because of his roommates. And then it makes me wonder about like the older gay male who is HIV positive and can't necessarily afford to live on his own. And that was an interesting thing that they brought up. They didn't really explore.
But well, that's my other plot gap here is, where did Vic get the money to move out? Because in previous episodes, he was always broke and living off of a disability check.
It must be, maybe Rodney's doing really well. Rodney's not necessarily doing really well because he lives with like three other people.
Yeah. I mean, it's minor. It's like,
yeah,
these are just the things I think of when I'm watching this. Like, wait, I thought that Vic was destitute and had to like take a job at the diner that one time.
That one time where it took him like 2 hours to make.
Oh, wait, I know where he's getting his money. He's a partner with Emmett.
There it is. We got there, listeners. I'm sure you were all just screaming at us. We're like, he works with Emmett.
But well, we needed to be reminded of that.
We got there. We got there.
Yeah, so, he should have said, you know, when he and Rodney on their date, now that I'm making some money and
we should do this.
I'd like to build a home with you. That's better than being like Debbie, like being the villain there.
She wasn't so much a villain, but she was definitely annoying. I will say she was annoying.
Another thing I found annoying is that suddenly Vic knows how to do algebra.
I don't fucking get algebra.
Here, let's see. Make X equal to Y, then squared. You've got your solution.
Ah, I get it. Awesome.
I was always good at numbers. Especially cute ones.
I know, right?
It's like, make X equal to Y and square it. What are you talking about, Vic?
I'm sorry, but a man that age would have never known how to do algebra.
I did like his cute line that he was always good with numbers.
Yes, I did like that. But I also like, I think it was so fascinating to watch Vic go to Michael for advice. We've seen everybody go to Vic for advice, and he's always been the sage, wise old person who doles out the right advice. So to see Vic in that position, I was like, okay, well, this is a little fun. I think this is the first time we've experienced this.
There's a nice piece of cinematography when Vic walks out for the last time and Debbie is literally in the home alone. And she's just kind of looking around like, I wonder what my purpose is now. Because her purpose had always been to care for Vic and to look out for Vic, make sure he's getting his meds on time. You know, that tray of meds that he would take.
But now her son is with someone who mm-hmm. loves him and takes care of him. Her brother is now with someone who loves him and takes care of him. So, yeah. And I love that they could have easily have gone the route of Debbie flipping out and being against letting Vic move out or something like that. And she takes the news, she processes it and says, you are right. You deserve this new lease on life. And I was like, thank you.
Yay, Debbie. So Brian finds an office. I've decided that I want Jennifer Taylor to be my realtor.
I am 100% okay with that too.
She identified her client's desired style. Delivered a space that was a perfect match.
And when he gets to the baths and she's there, she says, I'll show you around. And I thought it was such a wasted opportunity for a punchline from Brian.
Yeah, let me show you around.
He was like, I remember something. That could have been something. It was just him taking photos. And
well, the pithy line was when he was outside with Justin in the alley.
Yes.
This is where I get off. It's a little early in the day, isn't it?
Yeah. But I'm... Did you notice that when Brian and Jennifer were going around the bathhouse that Brian covered his hand with his sleeve to open a door, but then later on he didn't cover his hand to turn on a shower? So,
oh my God, the continuity of this.
This scene cracked me up though. I liked it.
It was good. And I'm assuming that this spa shut down because of stock.
I don't know. It looked like it shut down because it was derelict.
It
was a mess in there.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how long has this particular bathhouse been shut down because Justin's goodbye line is like, it's a little too early in the morning for this, don't you think? Or something like that.
Yeah, so Justin must have thought it was still open. I guess it would have been a nice touch if it was like the gravel pit, which we had heard of before. And there was like a sign on the door, like out of business, blame Stockwell.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's like, how many bathhouses are there in Pittsburgh?
I was going to say, because I don't think this was a bathhouse that
we've ever seen before.
I've never seen before, so I would have been more interested if it had been one that we could recall.
Hits and misses for this episode. My hit, just like last time, is what we just talked about, which is Brian and Jennifer in the bathhouse together. I just thought it was just really well shot and executed. And it was a high point of the episode for me. The rest was just kind of like, There's a good song playing in there. It's called The Cedar Room by Doves.
Seed.
Cedar. Not seeding. That's a different area of the bathhouse. So yes. That was the only hit that I really found in this episode.
Well, my hit is Debbie being understanding with Vic and Vic getting that new lease on his life. I got so excited and happy for him and Rodney. They're the couple I'm rooting for.
Do you remember what happens to them?
No, and don't
okay, I won't
make
spoil.
Me sad.
How do you know it's a sad thing?
Don't make me sad if it is.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember, so.
So my miss in this episode, like last time, was the episode. This one is like, just a huge departure from everything in the previous three seasons. It's all manufactured drama.
I feel like we're going to get to the end of the season when we do the recap. You're going to be like, my miss was the season.
Well, the problems here seem fake. The dialogue surrounding them is sophomoric. Resolutions come fast and easy too often. There's a lot that is dictated to us that we don't get to experience ourselves. The show seemed decidedly less fabulous than last season, any of the previous seasons.
It feels drab.
Yeah, there's something about this that isn't as exciting as it was. And the tagline that Showtime was using in promoting it was, the original comes of age. I don't know.
So it's grain. That's what it's saying.
Well, I don't know is that I wanted to come of age with this show. I think I liked the problems of them partying all the time. And I think there's a lot that could be done there. And now the first time that they're coming of age, the writing staff is really struggling with how to take these characters that we've known for 3 years and do something different with them. And when they do something different, it seems so outlandish that it becomes unbelievable and a little bit troublesome.
My miss is Justin blindly following along with the Pink Posse. Now we got someone who in the span of an episode and a half goes from let's be understanding and safe to, yeah, let's go beat up this guy that we provoked into giving us the response we wanted to justify us beating the shit out of him. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, again, it's just like this weird writing.
Yes, it's like when earlier in the episode when Jennifer has, you know, announces her problem with him trying to go out and look for trouble after what he went through. She is still his mother and has every right to be like, what are you doing?
Right.
You've survived this once. Why are you now going out and trying to incite something that could
be? Yeah, Jennifer was more concerned about his haircut than anything.
Ooh, her reaction to that was hilarious.
Yeah. Brian was turned on by it. He's like, this is a new genre. You're going into Otterland here.
Ooh.
Well, you know, actually, I did notice that Justin is not quite as smooth as he used to be. Dang. They're letting his chesticles grow out.
Yes.
That was from that moment where I saw his dick for that one frame.
You spent 4 hours on that one frame.
This has been episode 3 of season 4, Starting a Whole New Life. Next time on Still Queer as Folk, Justin finds Cody becoming too violent and Brian hires Ted at his new agency.
Melanie struggles with an important case and Hunter's social worker arrives unannounced.
That will be episode 4 of season 4 and it's called Escalating Violence.
Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at StillQueerAF and like us on Facebook at StillQueerAsFolk where we can continue the discussion.
You can find me on Instagram at Patrick Randall and I'd love to connect with all of you.
And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at MatthewPD.
Thanks for listening. If you could please leave a positive review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, we'd really appreciate it. We really need some more reviews. Until next time, I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
Still Queer as Folk was produced by me, Patrick Randall, for Slightly Unbalanced. Matt Dominguez wrote and performed the show with me. Still Queer as Folk is made with love in Chicago.